Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on listeners' questions when we come back. You know, 3,000 years ago, before the science of meteorology was even thought of, Solomon wrote in Ecclesiastes 1, verse 7, that all the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea isn't full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. Well, every year the continents and islands of this earth pour down into the oceans a stupendous volume of water. In fact, it's about 286,000 cubic miles of water run into the oceans every year. Now, for century after century, millennium after millennium, this has been going on, and the sea hasn't increased its level by so much as an inch. Now, how is that possible? Well, we call it the cycle of evaporation and precipitation. The writer of Ecclesiastes said that the ocean maintains its level in spite of this gigantic annual influx because the rivers go back to the place from whence they came. And indeed they do. Every drop of rain that falls climbs back upon the Creator's elevator of evaporation to form themselves into clouds and ride back to the head of their toboggan slide to begin their journey all over again. Now, in the modern science of meteorology, all of this is understood and its laws are comprehended. Well, modern science today has learned what the writer of Ecclesiastes knew 3,000 years ago. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Bible. And this is one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School conducted twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to our website and download it. And we have a page in our archives where that free general law CD package is located, and you can stream it or you can download it. If you're listening on a radio station somewhere in the world and you don't have a computer, then call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we've been talking about letters that we receive here at the law school, letters and telephone calls. Sometimes they come by ordinary mail, sometimes most of them come by email. And the writers sometimes expect replies from us. I thought I would tell you, here's why I don't reply, or here's when I do reply, or here's what you can expect if we answer your letter. Here's a letter from Mel. Mel says, need help, please. County has sent a letter listing violations of ordinance. Is there a motion that one can file to ask for constitutional authority of county to assume they have the power? Is there a way to stop them? Just received the letter in first-class mail yesterday, Mel. Well, Mel, this sounds like a last-minute Hail Mary pass. The answer to your question is no, there is no form letter or motion that you can write when you receive a letter of a violation of an ordinance. That's not a complaint. That's a notice that, hey, you're in violation. That gives you an opportunity to correct that violation. Now, if your position is, well, this ordinance is unconstitutional, then there's two ways for you to deal with it. The ordinary way is to do what Rosa Parks did. You ride the front of the bus, you let them charge you with a crime, and then you go defend it on those constitutional grounds. If you're correct, the law will be either overturned or the law will be changed in some way. Or if you're wrong, then you'll be convicted. All of your appeals will fail. The law will be upheld. And then, in any event, you'll have your answer. Now, oftentimes, the constitutional authority of the county to assume that they have this power is presumed in the law. It's up to you to show that they do not have this constitutional power. This is called the duty of going forward. First of all, the county presumes that it's got the power. The courts presume that they have the power. And they wrote you a letter and said, we do have the power. Now it's up to you to show that they don't have that. About 75% of laws in this country are in fact unconstitutional, as they are applied to individuals. Only about 10% of the time is a law unconstitutional on its face. In the Rosa Parks case, that's one of those rarities. It was unconstitutional on its face. Governments oftentimes enact laws that are unconstitutional, and they're presumed to be constitutional until they're shown to be otherwise. But an unconstitutional law is unconstitutional from the time that it's enacted, not from the time that it's overturned. Most laws are never tested for constitutionality. So, if you want to test the law for its constitutionality, the greatest rate of success is going to be in testing it as it's applied to you. Such as Yoder versus Wisconsin, for example, decided back in 1979, where the state of Wisconsin said Yoder's taking his children out of public school before they were 16 was a violation of Wisconsin law. The Supreme Court said no. That law, as it's applied to the Amish, is unconstitutional, but it's not unconstitutional as it's applied to Catholics, Protestants, and Jews. So again, your greatest chance of success will be in testing its constitutionality as it's applied to you, not on whether or not it's unconstitutional on its face. Now, this kind of information is taught in our class on courtroom strategy and procedure. And the solution to your problem is to learn the law so that you can apply the law in your own behalf. All right, thanks, Mel, for writing that. Now, here's a letter. It comes from Bob. He says, thank you for your offer on the Internet for the four-hour CD. Please forward it to, and he gives me his name and address. So, Bob, why don't you just go to our webpage and download it now that we've put it on the web. And he says, now, this question is not asking for legal advice, subject removing oneself out from under Caesar. I hope this is not out of line as to what I may ask and hopefully receive help to learn about this question to follow. Please, what is your take on the forms and or procedure and mailing list for rescinding birth certificates, social security numbers, voters' registration, and driver's licenses? And are these and are there others to consider, such as banks, FDIC, and others? Okay, well, we'll start with the last one. Yes, there are a potential, or there is a potential of 37 contracts that you may have with the civil law state. The act of rescinding these, which you'll find under rescission of contract in Bouvier's Law Dictionary, is to unilaterally rescind them under the basis of fraud. And that's because you cannot rescind a contract unilaterally. You have to have the other party's permission, unless fraud is involved. If there's no fraud, then you have to fulfill your end of the contract. If there's fraud, then you can unilaterally rescind it. Now, you asked about forms, and oftentimes these patriot groups will come up with a form for everybody. Just fill in the blanks, kind of like you learned how to do in the first grade. It's what the banks and all of the governmental agencies teach you how to do. But if you do that, you're going to find that it runs afoul of the truly and sincerely held rule under Seeger versus United States. Now, if you'd like to learn how to make these rescissions, it's in our Tax and Status School. So if you'll call us and ask about Tax and Status, which is the first school that I recommend that you start, and is when people call, sometimes they ask, well, what school should I start with? The answer is Tax and Status. Number two is Business. Number three is Courtroom Strategy and Procedure. And then number four is the Mosaic Law. That's the order in which I recommend them. Now, these forms that are oftentimes put out to patriots from these patriot groups are inappropriate. It needs to be in your own writing, and it needs to be from your own experience. So it needs to be a document. A rescission is a document that you write up yourself, and it's peculiar to you and you alone. Forms, don't hack it. All right, with that out of the way, let's go on to another one here. You teach class proposing to make or how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. And yet you say you would not buy real estate now because the market is headed much, much lower. All right, that's the first sentence. Now, that's exactly correct. This is Hans, or Hans. I remember Hans Wegner. I used to call him Hans, you know, spelled H-A-N-S. Oh, he'd get mad, and he'd say, Hans, Hans, my name is Hans. Okay, Hans. You teach a class proposing how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres. Now, that's true. That comes from Tuskegee Institute. And black guy down there, what was his name? Now I'll think of it here in a minute. But he came up with that concept or that idea. There's about 4,000 of these little economic units operating in the United States. What we added to that was the Mosaic Law. And all of these laws that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai. Anyway, yeah, I would suggest that you wait this out unless you're in a hurry to get started. And that's because farmland has dropped in value by 3.5% in the last year. There's an economic collapse underway. And housing prices, which have already fallen by 40%, are going to fall by another 25 or 30% over the next year or two. So let's suppose that you wanted to buy a house and today it's priced at $100,000. Or say you wanted to buy a farm and it's priced at $100,000. Over the next year or two, the value of that thing is going to go down by 30%. So it's going to be worth $70,000. Now, it might be worth buying today, because if you want to get started today and get cooking, the property is going to devalue by another $30,000. But let's suppose that over the next 36 months you get it up and running and it's cranking out $100,000 a year. Well, all of a sudden that $30,000 loss on the purchase price isn't all that big a deal, is it? So I don't think I would wait for 2 or 3 years for the prices to drop $30,000. I think I'd go ahead and bite the bullet and buy the $100,000 piece of property today, because it'll take you about 3 years to get this project up and running. So, paragraph two, you say, well, so if someone takes your class and doesn't currently own 25 acres, are you also proposing they sustain the losses to accrue from a decline in the value of that property, which you see forthcoming? I just answered that, yes. And also, what in the world is your daughter doing working for a bank? Well, she works at a bank because that's where she makes her living. And I thought you viewed the Federal Reserve and their agents' banks as handmaidens of Satan himself. And I do. And you say, I don't get it. Well, it's simple enough. My daughter's 37 years old. And she doesn't mind me very well. That's how simple that is. A response would be appreciated. Well, here I am. Here's my response. Now, I don't know about you, Hans, but I've got several children, and they don't listen very well. Never have, don't now, aren't likely to in the future. And working for that bank at some point in time is going to come back and bite her in the butt, but it hasn't yet. And I've told her about banks and what I think about it, so she's very well aware of that. But see, she went to college, and she's smarter than the old man. All of my children are smarter than I am. All right, so with that out of the way, let's go on to the next one here. Here's one from Caesar. Caesar says, my name is Caesar. I'm interested in your home course CDs. You list Title 42, Basic Strategy and Procedure, Tax and Status, Private Business. Would you please send me more information on how I can get these CDs on these subjects? Well, no, we don't send that information out. But if you call me, we'll tell you all about it. So, Caesar, why don't you just please call us here at the law school, and we'd be happy to talk to you. Another guy says, I'm requesting a price list for your CDs. This is Jamie. I was wondering if you were still offering the free introductory CD package. We do. It's on the internet now. If you'd like one of those, if so, I'd like one of these, please. All right. He wants a price list. We do not publish and we do not put out a price list. And that's because we don't deal in trade, commerce, business, or industry affecting a public interest. We have to keep it private. And so what we used to do in the past was we would offer you this free introductory CD. You write me a letter or an email, say, please send it, and I'd send it. Then, because you invited me to send it, I could call you on the phone, talk to you. But now, because we can't keep up with that demand, we now put it out on the internet. So now that it's out on the internet, you have to call me, pursuant to Wolf Company versus Industrial Court. And I called, I did this one the other day. I'm going to do it again and again, because we get this very, very regularly, so that you can grasp it and understand it. Now, I don't make these laws, rules, and regulations. For instance, there are laws that say you can't sell raw milk for human consumption. I think that's bad law. I don't think that it's the way it ought to be, but that's the way it is. Okay, so I have to follow that law. Now, there's ways that we can drink raw milk in human consumption. I drink raw milk every day. And you can drink raw milk every day, but in a lot of states, the government will be trying to trip you up and find out if you're selling this raw milk to others. And so one of the ways that we do that is we sell pet milk, pet food. Now, if you take that pet food home, feed it to your kids, that's between you and your kids, but it doesn't involve me. Another way is to sell shares in a cow. See, I can sell you a cow, and then you can hire me to milk your cow, then you can come by and to take your milk home. Now, we can do that. And the same thing is true here when we're dealing here in trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. In order for me to operate my school privately, I can't operate in commerce because I don't have a business license. And I don't want to get a business license because I don't want to deal in trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. I want to deal privately, just with you. So we don't send out price lists and we don't put the prices on the internet, and you have to call me and you initiate that call. That's called free speech. So if you'll call me on the phone, that's free speech. That's a First Amendment protected right. Jamie, you and I can just talk and talk and talk. But if you don't call me, then I don't want to enter into commerce, and so therefore we're stuck. Okay? So that's the way that game has to be played. Now, here's a fellow named Nick, and he says, I've been listening to you on the web for a couple days now, and I really think you're onto something. And I'd really like to take your homeschool classes that teach subsistence living and growing enough money to feed my family, and also the class that talks about business and how to conduct a business in gold and silver. Since I'm young, married, and apparently have been practicing communism without knowing it for all of the 27 years of my life, I don't have the gold pieces available to pay you for your classes. I do have skills in website design and search engine optimization. I have ideas on how to take what you teach, especially the stuff to help people make money and grow food, and to help you make more sales through online purchases of home study classes. I can trade my services to update your website and optimize it for your home study classes. And if you like my ideas on how to sell more of your homeschool classes online, I would trade my work for doing it for a reasonable price in silver, and then trade that for your classes. Thanks for taking the time to consider my proposal. Well, all right, Nick, that's a good proposal. I'm not throwing rocks at you, and I'm not going to rain on your parade, but I just explained, son, if I wanted to sell more schools, I'm pretty cocky and confident that I could do that. I need to get a business license and a social security number and a taxpayer identification number, do all those things the government wants me to do to enter commercial business here on the internet. Then we can sell more schools. But my objective is not selling schools. I know that sounds a little bit bizarre here, but we're not here to sell schools. We need to sell schools to support our work on the internet and radio. But our main thrust in life is to identify the faults and to steer you on to the truth. Now, that's what makes us kind of interesting and kind of unique. So what I really want to do is to come on the air and tell you about vaccinations. That's what we're going to talk about next week. Vaccinations. Do you really believe you need an H1N1 flu vaccine this fall? You really think that's good for you? So I'd like to tell you the other side of the story. 88% of the people in this country believe in vaccines, and they get vaccinated. God, they love it. 12% of us don't. Now, because 88% believe in vaccines and practice it, and 12% of us do not, does that mean that the 12% of us are correct and the 88% are in error? Or does it mean because the majority, 88%, practice it, the 12% of us that don't must be in error? Who has been deceived here? In order for me to finance that, and I have to have something to sell, so I can come on the air and I can wheedle, beg, and plead with you, well, please, won't you come, Nick, and support us today, and send us your love offerings, and so we can get this truth out to the people. Or, as I mentioned the other day, I could start calling Bill Gates and say, Bill, why don't you send me $1 million so that I can go out here and do this job? But if I go to Bill, Bill's going to say, hey, I believe in vaccines, and I don't want you to talk about vaccines. That's what happened to 60 Minutes. One day they wanted to do a show on tobacco. This is quite a few years back, you know, but they wanted to do a show on tobacco. And the tobacco advertiser said, if you do a show and expose tobacco and you're negative about it, we'll pull our advertising from CBS. And CBS did not air the 60 Minute program. But that's where reality's at. All right, so the alternative then is it has to be that this has to be a self-supporting enterprise. So that's why we do this. Now, in order to have this self-supporting enterprise, this private school that isn't supported by any big-ticket donors, and I don't have to come to you and beg, wheedle, and whine, then I have to operate a school privately in which the customers pay us money in gold coin, and we're not involved in any trade, commerce, business, or industry, so we don't have any licenses and permits, and so we can do this according to the Ten Commandment model under our constitutional form of government, pursuant to the First Amendment. We can actually practice what we preach. Kind of a wild new idea. So that's what we're doing. Now, oftentimes people will call me and say, gee, I don't have the money. Your proposal here is, let's go into commerce and let's go sell a bunch of schools. Well, let's stay out of commerce and let's not sell a bunch of schools, but let's sell a few schools to the right people who can use them. Most people cannot use these schools. Just like most people cannot practice the laws of the Bible, as is evidenced by the fact that they don't. So simple that is? All right, so this program isn't for everybody, but it might be for you. And if it is, then let's figure out a way for us to pay for this. On our website, there's a trade list. Now, when you come to our business school, we'll teach you how to trade. Trade is a very, very important means of making property, creating property. You buy it for a nickel and you sell it for a dime. Or you trade it for a pocket knife and then trade the pocket knife for a bag of marbles and trade the bag of marbles for a little toy truck and then trade the little toy truck for a bicycle and then sell the bicycle or trade the bicycle for a motor scooter and then trade the motor scooter for a motorcycle and the motorcycle for an old car and then trade the old car. You know, so on up the line there, and so you can get what you want by trading, and trade is very important. Now, I can trade with you, but I don't think that what you have that you've offered here is something that I want to trade for. But you're on the right track, and so let's talk about trade. Now, let's learn how to trade, and I'll show you how to make a lot of wealth out of your trades. All right, trade list on our web page. Here's a guy named W.S. His name is Bill from W.S. Oh, his name is William. And he signs off here on Bill. He says, please send me the free 4-hour sample course packet. And also information and the cost of the most appropriate home course for dealing with Child Protective Services, also known as Social Lady. Well, that's a school, Bill, that we have called Family Court, or Family Law. And it talks all about that. Now, I did a case here years ago, and I found out in the case that I was doing, it was a child custody case over one of my grandchildren, that a 6-week-old blonde, blue-eyed baby is worth $80,000. Isn't that special? And Social Lady is a part and parcel with this trade in babies. Very, very lucrative trade. The lawyers get paid. Social workers get paid. Psychologists and psychiatrists get paid. Judges get paid. I mean, everybody's getting paid. Everybody's making money. And they're making money off the people that want these little babies. So, the family court, and then there's a second class that you need to go along with it, which is called courtroom strategy and procedure. And then, again, you say, here is what these people did to my grandson after kidnapping him and his brother. Well, you put it on www.youtube.com. And so, I'm pretty familiar with that, Bill. I'm pretty knowledgeable about that, and thank you very much for steering me on to it. And then you write, here's an article that I wrote about corporal punishment you might find interesting. And so he sent that. And then said, my ignorant relatives on the other side of a divorce child custody battle couldn't run to the CPS fast enough to tell them about it. The children were not spanked since they were well behaved in my presence. All right, so corporal punishment is not against the law in any state in the union. Corporal punishment is a part and parcel. Now, here's what I suggest. Every state has its own code, own statutes. Have you ever thought about researching the statutes concerning child custody and child rearing in your state so that you're as knowledgeable as or more knowledgeable than the social worker? Man, that's a wild new concept, isn't it? Now, when you start off in this program here, we got page one. There are 12 things that a juvenile judge is looking for in placing a child, whether with its mother, father, or in a foster home. 12 things. Do you know what those 12 things are? Because right away, if you knew what that judge was looking for, see, it's like having the answers to the test on Friday, and you've got the answers on Wednesday to Friday's test. Isn't that special? Now, the social lady goes to college, and she spends 4 or 5 years here in college to get dumbed down so that she can get a job as a social worker here with the state social services department, and she learns a lot of laws passed by the legislature and the welfare department. What would be wrong with you studying those same laws so that you know as much as or more than social lady? Boy, that'd level up the playing field, wouldn't it? Now, if you want to do litigation, my wife has done 17 child custody cases over the past 25 years. 17 that she's directed and won 17 out of 17. That woman is good. She's interested in child custody cases. She's interested in that branch of law, and she's knowledgeable. And she can help guide you. Now, we don't want to spend a lot of time here giving you little bits and pieces so that you can go in here, you know, on Wednesday here. I need to know this so I can go in on Wednesday and defeat social lady. What we like to do is to turn out a student with a good, well-rounded, and fundamental education. And if family law is your thing in life and child custody, then this is the class for you. It's called family law. Family law. And this is called code pleading your state child welfare statute so that you can be a better player than social area. Then, when you practice corporal punishment, I'll give you a quick illustration. I had a student one time up in New Hampshire. He's divorced. He's got his little girl, 8 years old. Passover comes up. He has the little girl, takes her to his house. And he and his second wife have the Passover lamb, and they killed the lamb. Little girl goes home, and she's telling her mother about how they killed the Passover lamb and sprinkled blood on the doorposts and did all these things. And predictably, the mother called the welfare department, said her kid had been traumatized and wanted this guy arrested for cruelty to animals and blah, 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 blah. This guy had already been through my school. He went to the statutes and found that in New Hampshire there is a procedure which was authorized in 1924 for the sacrifice of animals. He did it correctly. The case was dismissed. And then he went into social lady, and he said, okay, now that that's out of the way, let's start talking about. And that's the way he solved the problem. Won both cases, one with social lady and one with the criminal charge on cruelty to animals. It's simply knowing your statute and then practicing the law, that's all. And the man never was in violation of any law. You can stay out of more trouble than you can get out of there, Bill. All right, what else have we got here? It's time for me to tell you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the law hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, just download it off of our webpage. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour, an editorial review, gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. As a corollary to this fellow Bill, who wrote and asked us about the Child Protective Services and so on, remember, we can't give you legal advice. That's a realm that's locked up and owned by the American Bar Association. Now, when you go to law school, the law school professors, I think I saw a number here the other day, 75% of law school professors are not licensed attorneys, and I'm one of those. It is true that 25% of law school professors or teachers are, in fact, attorneys. Alan Dershowitz is one. He also practices law. Most of us don't. So, sometimes people are sometimes surprised, and they say, well, gee, you're teaching law, and you can't give me legal advice. Well, you have to be licensed to do that. Furthermore, you people live in other locations. I can give you an illustration. Let's suppose you call me from California. And let's suppose that I was licensed to practice law here in Missouri, and you call me from California, and you ask me a legal question, and I charge you a fee, and I give you this legal advice. Now I'm in violation of the California Bar Association. I would have to be licensed to do this over the air in all 50 states. That's not very practical. So lawyers, you know, are governed by law in a way that's unique. And the bar associations have a monopoly position here in the United States and in their states, just like the medical professionals do, and they exercise that monopoly, and so then the rest of us just have to toe the line. Now, the exception to that is, if you're a student in school, well, now we have a different relationship. We're not talking about a lawyer-guardian-ward relationship here. We're talking about a student and teacher relationship. So as a student in school, if you were to ask me a question, our relationship in that regard that we can do. So keep in mind that there are exceptions to the law, and there are rules that we can follow, and then there are rules that we have to follow whether we like them or not. All right, here's another letter. Here comes from a fellow named Frank. He says, "Talk to your mom today, and I'm so glad to hear that you're still among the living. You came close, and I'm so happy that you survived your ordeal, and I pray that you get better." This is a letter written to my boy Dirk. As each day passes, he says, "May the Almighty bless you with long life. Drop me a line if you feel like it, and say hi. Well, I'd love to hear from you." Now, I appreciate that, Frank. You wrote a letter here where our boy was in the hospital. He was in intensive care. That's what set me behind this year. I was kind of out of the office. I kept up with my radio broadcast, but we didn't keep up with much else. And so, as a result of that, I had to make some changes here. And so, I appreciate your concern here, Frank, and I thank you very much for your letter. Now, here's another letter from Frank, same guy. And he asks me several questions here, so let's take a look at question number one. He says, "Why do you pay property tax on your land? Why don't you own your land in fee simple, allodial or allodium?" And the reason that we don't is that there isn't any allodial or allodium in America, not since the Land Patent Act of 1820. Now, we had allodial tenure and title, and in Pennsylvania, they still, in their constitution, call it land in Pennsylvania is held in allodial, or allodium. But the reality of the bankruptcy of 1933, House Joint Resolution 192, dispels that. Now, there's been a number of amendments and changes in the Land Patent Act of 1820. It was amended in 1837, 1860. To 1880-something, and finally repealed in 1964. Now, the reason I pay property tax on this property is because I don't own it. And any of us that are paying property tax on land, it's the prima facie evidence that you don't own it. If you owned it, then you wouldn't be paying for it. You know, the prima facie evidence that you're paying rent to Hertz and that you don't own the car is that you're paying the rent to the Hertz company. Now, euphemistically, we say that's your car. Oh, you have the red one. Oh, you're driving the red Ford Taurus. Yeah. Now, that's my Ford Taurus, but it's rented from Hertz, isn't it? Question number two, isn't it true that when you exchange your gold for fiat currency, and now you have a dishonest weight in your bag when you go to pay Walmart, perpetuating the dishonest theft system? Sounds confusing. The Federal Reserve note is taxable commercial paper giving jurisdiction to the beast. All right, now that was question two. So let me go back here and let's reread this. Isn't it true that when you exchange your gold for fiat currency that you now have a dishonest weight in your bag? Well, I'm careful, Frank, not to put those Federal Reserve notes in my bag. Now, men used to carry purses. These little purses, my granddad used to carry one in his pocket. That's why he kept his change in. And I do, and I carry that purse in my bag, and that's what I carry gold and silver coin in. Now, I carry Federal Reserve notes in my shirt pocket. Now, a Federal Reserve note is a dishonest weight, a dishonest measurement. It proposes to be a dollar. It's not. A dollar is 412.5 grains. It's 371.5 grains of 3/9 fine silver. That's what a dollar is. Now, we have a new dollar, which is 480 grains of 3/9 fine silver. So we have the old dollars, which are short, 108 grains. And then we have the new dollars, which have a full 1 ounce of 3/9 fine silver in them. So, you should keep your paper money those unjust weights and balances separate from your bag. All right, now, this jurisdiction, I think, is the wrong word here, Frank. I think consent. The Federal Reserve note is a taxable commercial paper giving consent to the beast. And I think the beast is the wrong word to use. The beast is something that we read about in the book of Revelation. I don't think that Florida or California qualifies for that. So I think that the consent by use should take the place of jurisdiction, and the state should take the place of that beast. So the FERN, then, the Federal Reserve note, is a taxable commercial paper giving consent by use to the state. Now, that's the correct way to phrase that, and that's true. It does. And that's why we ought not to use them. You know, God instructed us, thou shalt not steal, and then he gave us a statute, and the statute says that you're not to use unjust weights and balances. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Go to Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, and Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 15, 16, 17. I'll tell you that same story. And what we're trying to do here is to comply with the law of God, the law of Moses. So, would it be a good idea, you say in paragraph 3, to have a chain of stores that deal in property? Well, of course it would be. Gold and silver, and private banks that deal in gold and silver. Well, we have that. And when you go to a merchant and you talk to your merchant about taking gold or silver coin for his alfalfa pellets or for his hay or for his legal services or whatever you're trying to buy, and then you go to your gold broker, who is in fact acting as a private banker, that's what you've done. And then finally, in paragraph 4, you ask a coin in the fish's mouth. Emmanuel told Peter the fisherman to go to the sea and take the coin from the fish's mouth and then pay your tax and mine. And your question is, could it be that Peter went and caught fish and sold the fish to get the tax money? So why do you talk to them in parables? All right. Now, why do you talk to them in parables is a question that I answered the other day. You'll find the answer to that in Matthew 13, verses 10 through 17. And he speaks to these people in parables so that they can understand what he's telling them. Because if they understood it, they'd be responsible for it. And the average Joe six-pack isn't ready for that kind of responsibility yet. But let's go back here to this tax story. This story appears in Matthew 17, starting in verse 24. And your question was, did Peter go down, catch a bunch of fish, sell them, and then pay the tax? The answer is no, he didn't. Let's read it. Starting in verse 24, when they were come to Capernaum, they that received the tribute money came to Peter and said, does not your master pay tribute? Peter said, yes. And when he was come into the house, Jesus anticipated him, saying, well, what do you think, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? And Peter said to him, well, of strangers. And Jesus said to him, well, then, are the children free? Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea and cast a hook. Take up the fish that first comes up. And when you have opened his mouth, you shall find a piece of money. That take and give unto them for me and for thee. Now, oftentimes, I've had IRS agents say, see, Jesus paid his taxes. That's a lie. Jesus did not pay that tax. And if Jesus had paid that tax, then he would have been practicing idolatry, because that's what paying tax is, idolatry. Now, since it's against the law to do that, and notice that Peter here opened his big mouth. Listen to the tax collector again. When they came to Capernaum, they that received the tribute money, and there's a little number one there, then it was the those that sat and collected taxes. They asked Peter, doesn't your master pay tribute? Doesn't your master pay taxes? And Peter said, yes. The correct answer is, well, why don't you go ask Jesus? He's of age. What the hell are you asking me for? What would you say if somebody came up to you and says, hey, does George Gordon pay tax? Would you do me a favor and say, hell, I don't know what the hell George Gordon does. Why don't you go ask George Gordon what he does? What the hell are you asking me for? But that's a very standard government agent tactic, is to go get information about somebody from other people called hearsay. Let's go get talebearers over here to spread gossip. Okay, now that's number one. So when Jesus saw that, he asked Peter. He said, hey, Pete, he said, who do the kings of the earth collect these taxes from? Strangers or children? Well, the answer is they collect it from strangers. And that's why Americans are paying the income tax. Because they've signed a contract. Under your Constitution, you don't owe this income tax. You had to sign a contract with Social Security. Now that you signed your Social Security contract, you now owe the tax, and there's two taxes to pay. And they come under 7203 and 7343 of Title 26. And they're contiguous with Title 42, Section 301 through 335 of the U.S. Code. The children of America are not taxed. It's the strangers and sojourners that are taxed. And so what's happened here is that the government has turned all of us into strangers and sojourners. And they're taxing the strangers, not the children. And in a case decided back in 1928, I don't have it right here in front of me, it's on the other side of the room, but it's called Stewart versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce. And the court pointed out that the Congress does not assume to deal with non-taxpayers. Now, Jesus was a non-taxpayer. The tax collector asked Peter if his master paid taxes. Peter, wanting to, you know, put the best foot forward, said, oh, yeah, yo, God, yeah, he pays all of his taxes. You bet. Which was a damn lie. He didn't do that. He wasn't paying tax. But then he wasn't a stranger. Now, listen to the instruction here in verse 27. He said, notwithstanding, lest we should offend them. Unless, you know, we stir up a big stink here with tax evasion. Pete, now that you opened your big mouth, go down to the sea and cast in a hook and take up the first fish. Take up the fish that first comes up. And when you have opened his mouth, you're going to find a piece of money inside of his mouth. Take that piece of money and give it to them for me and for you. Go ahead and pay the tax. You do it. Pete, you go do that. You act as my front man. No, Peter did not go sell the fish. Read the story. The fish had a piece of money in his mouth. The right amount of money. I don't know how much the money was, but whatever it was. It was a miracle. Big Mike put it in there. Sent the fish. Peter caught it. Peter went and paid the tax. Peter paid the tax. Jesus didn't. And no, Peter didn't catch fish and sell them. That's commerce. When you're catching fish and selling them and then converting it to money and then going out here and buying stuff with it, that's called commerce. That's what we're trying to avoid, isn't it? All right. With that one out of the way, let's flip that one over. See what else we got here. Here's a guy, he says, this is Davon. That's an odd name, Davon. That's his first name. He says, I'd like a free CD set and I recommend your site to everyone. Thank you. Now, that's what we want you to do. You recommend to my site and you say, hey, this guy's kind of nuts, but he's pretty funny. He's got something worth saying. He's got worth something, something that's worth listening to. And then that gives me one more listener. And then the guy may say, this guy's a raving lunatic, and I don't want anything to do with him, and he may turn it off and never listen again. And that's fine. We told him once, didn't we? And all we need is an opportunity to tell these people, here's where the rubber meets the road. So thank you very much, Dave Vaughn, for telling your friends about us. We appreciate that. All right, here's Scott. Scott says, hey, I've been listening to your recorded radio shows, and I have enjoyed them immensely. You mentioned repeatedly in your shows a free set of CDs, and I'd very much like to have a set. What, if anything, do you need from me to provide me a set of this information? Thanks for your time and effort in trying to enlighten the masses. May you succeed in your efforts to save the Republic. I thought that was pretty good of him. All right, I'm not trying to save the Republic. I don't want to dash your hopes here, Scott. The Republic was destroyed at Appomattox Courthouse in 1865. That was the end of it. So the American Republic was converted into a democracy at Appomattox Courthouse. With House Joint Resolution 192, which was enacted on June 5, 1933, the American democracy was converted into the communist proletariat. Now, we constantly call this process democracy. So when we went to school, they told us about democracy, democracy, democracy. Well, boys and girls, the 56 signers to the Declaration of Independence were pretty prolific writers, all of them were. And they wrote an awful lot. And not a one of those signers of the Declaration of Independence, and not one signer of the Constitution of the United States, ever had one good word about democracy. They thought it sucked. Now, unfortunately, we've been converted over to a democracy. Then we were converted over to the communist proletariat, from which there is no salvation. The American experiment is dead on arrival. D-E-D, dead on arrival. What I want to do is to point this out and see if some of you people can't save yourselves off of the great ship America. It's going to sink. And it's going to sink with 300 million Americans on it. Like it or lump it. Just like the Roman Empire sank, the Babylonian, Assyrian, the Egyptian empires, they all collapsed. Just like the great American empire. And out of it, there will be some survivors. So if you could be one of those survivors, that's our mission here. I want to point out to you that we got some big, bad problems, and they need to be survived at the family level. That's where the survivors will be, right here at the family level. And you probably could do that, Scott. You could probably save yourself off the ship if you put your mind to it. So that's what we're trying to do, is to save some of the survivors, some of the passengers. Hey, I'm about out of time here, so let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that information can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.